The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
All right, let's go to the Zoom line here where we've got Kenley Nebaker with Train ND along with Levi Perkins with Perkins Electric Innovations. We're talking about the evolution, capital E, capital V, evolution like evolution, but evolution hybrid. It's a, I guess, combustion engine that's going to be turned into an electric hybrid is probably the one elevator pitch way to go about it. So, Kenley, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having us on.
Appreciate it. Levi, how about you, sir?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you having us.
Well, let's talk about the evolution hybrid, the evolution hybrid that's happening out in Williston, North Dakota. Kenley, go ahead and start with kind of the genesis of this, and then we'll hand it off to Levi, and you can talk about how you got involved, okay? Kenley, why don't you go ahead and start?
Yeah, so ultimately, when we applied for a grant from the EDA, the Department of Commerce, they're a federal grant. One of the things that we wanted to look at was the future, what we viewed as the future of the trucking industry, the transportation industry, and we're really trying to find a way to expose our students as well as the rest of the communities to the potential that lies within electric trucks or in this case a hybrid truck. And so I think as we looked at that grant and we tried to find a way to put within that grant some sort of an electric vehicle, this hybrid idea eventually rose to the top, to the cream of the top. I've never been a believer that it's all one or another, that it can be that we can marry technologies in the transportation industry to make things happen, and this project really fits that belief and that model.
Levi, talk to me about your electric innovations and some of your background. I know you've got a background besides that as well.
Sure. So I've been an ASE certified heavy duty diesel mechanic since 2005, and I went to school and got a degree in that, and I guess in 2003 actually. But I started a business in 2007, Perkins Performance, just focused mainly on kind of optimizing the combustion on these larger Class 8 truck engines, and then on pickup trucks. And I just think we've recognized that over the years that after treatment controls on combustion engines have become more and more complex to the point where it's taken the reliability of these trucks away. And there's got to be a solution. I mean, essentially what we want to do is we want to capture heat energy. We want to convert it into some kind of kinetic energy to drive this vehicle down the road. In Class 8, we're pulling trailers. So we're converting fuel, you know, heat energy and fuel to moving down the road. And I thought there's got to be a simpler way that we can do this to where we see a real big lack of trained technicians lately in the workforce, and really young technicians, and a real large group of technicians that are leaving. So we have this gap, and that maybe we'll save that for a whole nother conversation, but there's got to be solutions right now. And I don't personally feel that it's a 100% electric Class 5 through Class 8 vehicle that could fill that could be a solution for that gap that we've got. There's got to be some kind of marriage between our existing technology and then utilizing something new that would simplify drivetrain. And so spent a significant amount of time, I mean, over 20 years, close to 20 years in the heavy duty truck sector of industry. I've dabbled a lot in like alternative fuels and did a lot of conversions. I think some of the first like waste vegetable oil conversions on diesel trucks and things, and just trying to utilize alternative fuels. And it's been exciting, but there's only so much you can do with the reciprocating piston engine and then just a new modern drivetrain. And let's be honest, EPA and a lot of other organizations, Department of Environmental Quality, they've got just a lot of strict rules where you can't breach into them too far. And then there's got to be just a change. And so I've dabbled a lot in that over the years. And then I taught at a local college here in Southern Idaho for 8 years as a professor of technology over their heavy duty diesel truck program, and worked a lot with industry partners like Freightliner and Cummins and Detroit. And so I've kind of seen both sides of this spectrum. I thought that we've got to try to develop something a little bit better that would be a better solution. And so that's some of my background. That's kind of where we've been driving the bus the last little while to go in that direction.
Some of the past interviews we've done here on the Crude Life is Jerry Moyes of Swift Transportation, Paul Jett. Yes. And a gentleman from Jiffy Lube and Cummins, their names escape me off the top of my head. But one of the things that they were test marketing was the natural gas when it comes to engines. And they always said they just could not get over the Rocky Mountains, just could not get enough firepower to get them over. And that was always what I heard about electric engines as well. Talk to me a little bit about maybe some of these. You mentioned alternative fuels. So I think this hybrid and this marriage is the way to go. How are some of these other technologies doing?
So if I could speak to it for just a second, and I think what you were talking about, Jason, is in the past, we've had compressed natural gas as a supplemental fuel source. So they would supplement it with diesel and then fumigate it in front of the turbocharger, and then it'd go through the intercooler into the engine intake manifold. It would act as a catalyst to kind of help burn the remaining amount of fuel. A lot of the newer diesel engines are probably in the 33 to 35%, maybe even 38% fuel efficient, depending on what kind of turbocharger arrangement they have and waste heat recovery systems. But Then eventually what they ended up doing was they converted a lot of diesel engines over. Cummins, Detroit, I don't know if Caterpillar ever did that. International dabbled in a little bit, where they would run on strictly CNG. So we had like propane fumigation, LNG, and then CNG fumigation. And eventually they just went to strictly CNG as a fuel source. Well, I think some of the drawbacks with that is we don't have enough of a real integrated infrastructure for fuel across the United States. Not everybody could utilize that. They are low in power. What we determined was per pound or per gallon, whatever, however you want to look at it, there's less heat energy in that fuel. It burns cleaner. We have less hydrocarbons. There's a lot less emissions in CNG. It has less heat energy. So we're going to pack a lot more of it, you know, and the way that we utilize it in engine, a lot of the engines that they produce to run on CNG, they didn't completely re-engineer those to run it. It was a different cylinder head and different pistons, but essentially it was the same architecture as the diesel engine. And I don't know if it's ever been a great solution. They were really good for class five, and especially in metro areas where we had CNG fueling stations, but never coast to coast, like East Coast to West Coast long hauls. I don't see that as a solution at all.
How about when it comes to the jobs and just kind of the, I guess, the evolution that's happening here? One of the things that you mentioned, the diesel part of things. So I think of diesel mechanics. I think of just everything that goes into the trucking industry, transportation industry. What type of jobs are we looking at either changing, either going away and new ones are coming in? Maybe there's a little bit of an adaption here. Talk to me about some of the training and some of the jobs aspect that this project is going to kind of showcase.
That's it's going to talk to you. So Jason, just to give you a little bit more background, from 2016 from 2008 until 2016, I was the head over a department, the diesel technology program at the College of Southern Idaho. I thought it was a great program. I learned a lot about just in various ways, placement of students, the direction that industry was going with existing technology and then future technologies that they wanted to use with drivetrain and chassis components and brake components. But I also really realized that the farther we went down that road, we had very young technicians. The traditional students in a lot of these technical programs throughout the United States are anywhere between 8 to 20. That I think a really good consensus. And usually they were attending programs that were anywhere from 11 months to 18 months or 11 months to 24 months if they wanted to receive an Associate's of Applied Science or an Associate of Arts along with it. what I really come to realize was that there is, the jobs are very plentiful, and that for a long time, the industry lacked wages to pay these technicians. So technicians could wrap up $10,000 in tools or more, or maybe less, in an 18-month or 24-month program. And they had tuition on top of it, and then they would leave, and then their jobs were, you know, and I don't want to put a lot of hard numbers out there, but I know the time that I spent at the college, this was, you know, 6 years ago was my last year, the wages were lower. They just, it, for the amount of training they had and then money invested in tools and education, it didn't pay real high. And there was a lot of liability on the mechanics themselves and the technicians working on customer vehicles. So we would place almost 100% of our students, but then a lot of them had a hard time making a living doing it. And so what I found, that only about one third would stay in industry 1 to 3 years, one third would stay in industry somewhere between the 3 to 5 year mark, but only about 30% of them remained in industry over 5 years. And that was a really hard stat to kind of swallow, because we saw a low amount stay in industry, and a lot of it was the type of industry they're in. It was low pay, really high stress for the most part, and then a lot of money spent in ongoing tools, education, and software. Well, then what it does is it produces an environment where not a lot of young technicians want to either finish a degree or even stay in that industry. So we have a real industry shortage for trained technicians. And the other thing that happened too, and if you might let me elaborate, Jason, I'm sorry I'm going off on this, but it's an extensive amount of training that is involved with dealing with the CAN bus architecture, and then all of the digital, the digital platforms that are on these trucks. Some of them have over 20 computers that are on them, or processors or control units, if we want to be specific. And a lot of them have to do with the powertrain. Well, you could have a motor control module, an after treatment control module. You could have a central processing controller for all the dash units, all of the multiplex switches in the dash. It actually takes a lot of training to be successful. And with training, you'd think that they want to meet this wage gap, and they're just not doing it. So there's a lack of trained technicians, to make a long story short, and a very, very complex industry for being a diesel mechanic right now on all the spectrums, light duty, pickup truck, ag truck, or ag tractors, and then the heavy duty semi trucks, class 5 through class 8.
Kenley, talk to me about the CDL part of this. You've been on numerous radio stations across the state talking about CDL drivers were needed yesterday. We've had guests on from other parts of the country saying the same thing. Is this going to, add a new layer to CDL drivers, or is this going to be more, more of a hiccup, I guess? Is this going to be more stress on CDL drivers? Talk to me about how CDL drivers fold into this.
Well, I think that there's no denying that we have a massive shortage of CDL drivers, and looking at staring down the barrel of it getting very, very much worse. I think there's two aspects to this project. Number one is to get, I don't think, no matter where the future of the transportation industry goes, whether that's by some miracle they find a way to make it an all-electric vehicle, or whether it's this hybrid approach, or even if it's some variation, electric motors are going to be involved in the transportation industry in some aspect. And so I think that it's important that at least the students at TrainND Northwest, when they go through our program, that they have some level of experience with the nuances of driving an electric vehicle, the different things you need to look for on a pre-trip and a post-trip, things that you need to stay away from, things of that nature. Not unlike the current trucks, there are certain things that you need to be aware of. And so I think from an experience side, that's a big deal for our CDL program. And then number two is I do think that there is a new generation of people that will gain interests in the CDL industry and being a driver because of the excitement of these types of projects as we make them successful and come and get them produced on the road. I think that there will be it has the potential in my mind to reinvigorate the industry a little bit. And one of the things that me and Levi are very dedicated to in this project is making sure that this truck doesn't look like something foreign, right? When we build this truck, it will have the look of a classic, iconic American semi-truck. And I think that what we're trying to do is really show that truck that we all know and love that drives down the truck that or down the road that everybody likes the look of or likes driving, we can take that truck and advance its drivetrain and move towards the future of the industry and show how that works. And our hopes are that we show this off to high school students, to other people, and that they gain some interest in some renewed interest in the CDL program.
All right, let's talk turkey. Let's talk numbers here. What are the projections? So obviously this is part of a carbon footprint. This is also going to, I imagine, increase the mileage. I don't know if you want to call it miles per gallon or miles per volt, or talk to me about some of the projections, the bullet points, and just even if I got to start coming up with some new language and jargon, I guess.
Kenley, do you want me to?
Yeah, Levi, you take that one on. Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. So I guess I'll just start with what we know is in our heavy duty truck sector right now, Jason, just to give us a platform to kind of build off of. So historically, and I'll just start maybe in the 90s, and hopefully I'm not too long winded on this, I'll make it brief, but maybe even like 70s, 80s, 90s, a lot of these trucks, pre-emission trucks, so probably 70s, 80s, we were really lucky to get 2 or 3 miles to the gallon, sometimes 4 if you're low horsepower, low weight. So we'll just say, for instance, if we're pulling 80,000 pounds and we were 450 horsepower, an older truck, they actually had a really hard time. Mechanical injection, non-variable geometry turbos, you know, no after treatment, but definitely not any kind of electronic fuel injection management, no common rail systems. These trucks were lucky to get 3 miles per gallon. And if we wanted to convert it to kilowatt hours per mile, what we're really shooting for is a truck. So as we move up into the newer platforms of semi-trucks, yes, the engines have got a lot more innovations and technology on them. And really, they've been driven by emissions. As mad as someone gets about the complexity of these newer drivetrains, whether it be automated transmissions or the engines themselves and after treatment control, it really is driven by emission standards. And what the EPA has been worried about the last, we'll say 25 years, it really is the reduction of oxides of nitrogen and the reduction of particulate matter. So those two, they work in adversely of each other. As you lower one, it raises the other. So we have to have a lot of after treatment systems on those that kill fuel mileage. So as we move into the, you know, and right now, currently, a lot of new trucks, they can actually get 6 or 7 or 8 miles a gallon with all of the after treatment working on them. So it's, they're actually getting really good fuel mileage. There was pickup trucks when you're pulling a heavy load that do not get 8 miles to the gallon. You know, even current ones, they say they get 20 miles per gallon empty. But so what we're looking at is, we'd like to design an electric vehicle to where the drivetrain is simpler. We don't have an automated transmission with a lot of working parts to shift through the gears because we've got an engine that has to have RPMs above 700 to keep it running. You know, 700 to 2000 is a basic 15-liter engine. We want to have an electric drivetrain in order to keep it efficient. A lot of platforms that are being utilized right now in the kind of plethora of these class 5 through class 8 electric vehicles, several of them are utilizing drivetrain that are in the, some that are direct drive. They do not have transmissions. So there's no gear reduction. The nice thing about electric motors is they can build massive amounts of torque, if not peak torque, at zero RPM. So we would like to utilize those. Our build now, and I don't know if Kenley wants me to give you any specs, Jason, but I could give you some specs on a few of the motors that we've kind of spec'd out and played with for this particular one.
Yeah, we have just about 5-10 minutes left, so you bet.
Yeah, so what we'd like to use is we want to utilize a, it's a 300 horsepower to 470 horsepower motor. It's actually coupled to, it can be coupled to a 4-speed or 7-speed transmission. We most likely will couple it to an automated 7-speed transmission. It could be run in direct drive. We would lose a lot of the capability that the truck has to pull really massive amounts of weight on a steep grade or a steep incline without just pulling a huge amount of amperage from our controllers and getting them hot. So we'll most likely have some gear reduction there, with first gear being a gear reduction in the ballpark of like a 12-to-1. And then our seventh gear would be direct. We want it to be able to go, you know, the speed limit, which would be 60 or 65. And if we had areas where we could go faster, it could go faster than that. We definitely want it to pull 80,000 pounds. A lot of the current Class 8 electric trucks, whether it be like the Freightliner E-Cascadia or the Tesla trucks, they're utilizing somewhere in the 400 kilowatt hour to 600 kilowatt hour battery pack. And some of our really popular electric vehicles, in like the small sports cars and the passenger vehicles, they're 100 kilowatt hour or less. If that doesn't give us an idea of the immensity of the battery pack, it probably will be like a lithium iron phosphate pack, because they can take a lot of charging cycles, and they do not keep a real massive amount of battery memory. If we short cycle the battery before a charge, and we really like to utilize an existing powertrain. We've been working with Cummins a little bit on their, they've got some crate motors that meet Tier 4 final emissions, and we could run a 20 to 25 kilowatt generator on those to charge the battery as we drive, and it would most likely be diesel. We actually worked, there's two other companies we've been speaking with and in conversation about some gas turbine generators that are very light and actually really efficient, that could use a multitude of different fuels for our generator, our range extension device. We've never utilized that before, but it'd be fun to do it. And I'm hoping that it'd give us a range of over 1,000 miles before we'd have to actually stop and allow the generator to keep our batteries, probably a 600-volt battery pack, you know, in that range. They operate somewhere between a 590 and 630 volts.
Is this going to have a plug-in like a, you know, like an electric vehicle as well?
Yeah. We could do like a light-duty plug-in, which would be like 110. It probably takes several days to charge up a 600 kilowatt hour pack, but we could have our big SAE plugs that would be utilized on any of like the newer Tesla, Volvo cars, some of these other electric vehicles. And then you'd have like a, you know, an 8-hour charge cycle on that. If you wanted to plug it in and not utilize anything from the range extension device, just drive it, and we're hoping loaded it'd be over 300 miles, and then just plug it back in and charge it again. We could do that. I have some reservations, and I've spoken, you know, there's a lot of negative feedback on electric vehicles, with individuals saying we could actually overload an existing electric infrastructure or grid, so to speak, that we have if we have too many large vehicles plugging in the grid. And that's true. I mean, I don't know. There's, you know, there's these plans. Even current administration, not to get too much into politics, but where they're pushing to have a lot of electric vehicles. We don't have the electric infrastructure for it. We just need to be honest, call the kettle black. We don't have that yet. Can you imagine pulling into like a truck stop? And right now, currently, a lot of them, they can accommodate over 100 Class 8 trucks and trailers to fuel and then to park overnight, as far as a DOT layover for a driver, you know, a reset for him. How could you park 100 electric vehicles and plug 100 of them? We're talking megawatts, if not gigawatts, of energy that would be pulled out of a grid. It would no doubt increase electricity bills for consumers. And then there'd have to be new infrastructure built. And we're just not ready for it. And if we're not ready, then it won't happen. So we don't get to really change industry overnight. But I think that this could be a missing link that could allow us to continue to use fueling infrastructures and use the simplicity of electric drivetrain.
Kenley, how long do you see this project going? You mentioned supply chain. So, you know, the caveat of a supply chain disruptions, how long do you see this project taking?
Well, right now, what we're shooting for is a 9-month to 12-month project. If every star aligned from a supply chain standpoint, then it could possibly be a 6-month project. But what we're hoping for, taking into account the supply chain issues that are out there, is a 9 to 12-month project with the potential for if things get bad again, which the trucking or the CDL truck industry, semi-truck industry is already preparing for with their production expectations. We could see that extend past that, but we're really shooting and hoping for a 9 to 12-month project.
Well, taking a look at the clock here, just a couple of minutes left in closing. What should we walk away from here as we start to, I guess, go down this path, this journey, this adventure of the evolution hybrid?
I think from our perspective at TrainND, one of the things that we're really excited about with this particular project is the opportunity to show that that there are possibilities outside of all one or the other, right? It doesn't have to be all diesel. It doesn't have to be all electric. It can be a mixture and a marriage of both. And we can move the transportation industry forward with that type of an approach. And we're really excited about what that says and what that does for the industry. You know, there's been a lot of comment as we've made this project public. There's been a lot of comment that you can't have an electric driven vehicle in North Dakota, you know, because of the extremes of the weather. And we're really excited to show how we've already thought about those extremes and how we want to address those extremes and deal with them and show that this can be successfully done if it's done right in the appropriate way. So we're really excited about that and definitely feel confident that we have the right person building this truck for us. So Levi, what else do you got?
Jason, I'm excited about just the development of this new truck. One thing that I really wanted to talk about that we didn't spend a ton of time on, just as a review, I think the drivetrain will be simpler. I think it could be simpler for technicians to work on. I know that, having been a technician for over 20 years now. The other thing that I really foresee is that we have infrastructure for it already, whether if we want to utilize some of these more exotic drivetrains to power a generator like a gas turbine, we can utilize CNG or diesel or LPG, even hydrogen on some of these. I like the idea this first one will most likely be diesel powered. The other thing I really think that is interesting to point, if we have all these emerging platforms and new trucks that are coming out that are all electric, I love it. I love the technology, especially like some of these guys that are mavericks and these companies that are pushing the technology. It's awesome. The thing that I don't like is that they've reinvented all of the wheel. Well, with that, there you have inherent problems. So I thought there's a lot that we don't have to reinvent. We have axles that the general part of it's been around for, you know, over 50 years. We've got drivetrain components and frames and chassis that have been around a long time. We can utilize existing ones that we have right now and not make a truck driver or a fleet owner or operator feel that they're getting into a completely different type of vehicle. And that's the biggest thing for me, to do it on a classic chassis. I'm like, I want to electrify a classic Kenworth. I love the PACCAR chassis, Peterbilt and Kenworth, and show that it's a really neat looking show truck, but it's got all of the new technology for drivetrain. And that's the only reason we did it. We lost a lot of rolling resistance and just probably some parasitic drag on the shape of the truck and just aerodynamics in general, but that's okay. I think it was just more so to prove a point that we can do it on existing chassis, even an older one, and make it really viable and attractive to consumers and
and just something that could change industry.